For the scripture this morning, I've been asked to read from the Gospel of Matthew, 7th chapter, the 1st through the 5th verses. In your pew Bible, if you want to follow along, it's in the New Testament, page 6. And I'll be reading from the New International Version. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Let me take the speck out of your eye," when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. May God bless the reading of his word.
Joe said it hurts to take the plank out, and he's correct. It also hurts to leave it in, which might be part of what we're dealing with this morning. But sometimes I think that Christians are too worried about being nice. Can we be too nice? Now, I don't want that to be an excuse for us to start being ornery or to be hateful with one another. We come by that naturally, quite seriously, a consequence of the fall and sin in our lives. So we don't need any encouragement to be mean to one another, but I think sometimes we worry too much about being nice. And the issue with that is, what do we do with those times when we know that there is pain among us, that somebody has done something that is hurtful to another person, and we know it's there? What do we do with it in those times? Well, to help us visualize that, I have an object lesson. Some of you have seen this before. This is one of Rose's projects from last Thanksgiving. We estimate that there is 1.5 miles of yarn in this pom-pom. So for this morning, I want you to imagine that this is the pain, that one of us has done something that is hurtful to another person, and now they are carrying the pain, and you take the pain with you. Very foundational to who we are in the Church of the Brethren. And formed a congregation, began to realize they needed to make promises. But the next slide tells us another one. Romans 12:16, live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate and refuse to listen and insist that the...
Read from the Gospel of Matthew. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look no attention to the plank in your own eye? Plank in your own eye. You hypocrite, you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. May God bless the reading of his word.
Now, I don't want that to be an excuse for us naturally many times, and how many different bait with the lowly. We might think about how many of the conflicts and disagreements we have in our society right now are because one so-called doesn't understand the needs of some other group. Biblical New Testament writers talk about how, or disagreement or pain within the conflict. Would you mind advancing my slides for me this morning? The first one comes in Matthew chapter 18, verse 15. And if you are familiar with this one, if another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If you did something that was hurtful, we need to talk. This verse is how we got our beginnings, was as brethren read this verse. The way problems ought to be solved and the issues ought to be understood are by what this one group thinks, without realizing that this other group maybe just has a completely different perspective on it that is worth listening to and understanding before issues are resolved. We run into this one an awful lot. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity. And one more, 1 John 2:9. Whoever says, "I am in the light," while hating a brother or sister,
For the scripture this morning, I've been asked, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank?
It also hurts to leave it in, which might be part of what, to start being ornery or to be hateful with one another. We come by that naturally, quite serious pain. And the issue becomes, what do we do with it? Where does it go? How do we handle it? And so there it is, a visual reminder of the pain. It is helpful for me to remember just how many times and how many different biblical New Testament writers talk about how we are to handle situations where there is conflict or disagreement or pain within the congregation. It's all over the place. Ben, would you mind advancing my slides for me this morning? The first one comes in Matthew chapter 18, verse 15. And if you are familiar with this text, you will know there's a couple more verses we could have looked at following this one. If another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. If the member listens to you, you have regained that one. So, brother or sister, you did something that was hurtful. We need to talk. And you take the pain with you. This verse is very foundational to who we are in the Church of the Brethren. It's how we got our beginnings, was as brethren read this verse and formed a began to realize they needed to make promises to one another that would be lived out in our daily lives. But the next slide tells us another one. Romans 12:16, live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. We might think about how many of the conflicts and disagreements we have in our society right now are because one so-called haughty group, if you will, or one so-called upper group doesn't understand the needs of some other group and refuse to listen and insist that the way problems ought to be solved and the issues ought to be understood are by what this one group thinks, without realizing that this other group maybe just has a completely different perspective on it that is worth listening to and understanding before issues are resolved. We run into this one an awful lot. But go ahead to the next one. Galatians 5:22-23. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I would argue that every last one of those fruits of the Spirit would be incredibly helpful in times when there is disagreement. If we would be this way with one another when we don't agree, think how much differently our lives could be in difficult circumstances. And one more, 1 John 2:9. Whoever says, I am in the light, while hating a brother or sister, is still in the darkness. Most of us don't like talking about issues like this in such stark terms. But what John is saying to his congregation is, you can say for all the world to hear that, yes, you are a follower of Jesus, while at the very same time, your life and the way you relate to other people is telling the exact opposite story. And that people might look at you and say, when I consider what you say and what you do, I'm not sure. That's a stark, painful reality to consider, but there it is, another method, something else going on in our lives, another reality. Go ahead to the next slide, please. Why do so many of the New Testament writers talk about this? Conflict resolution and how to handle situations where we disagree. I can think of two that are relevant this morning. One is because the nature of the gospel itself is rooted in reconciliation. The basic story is that humanity is separated from God, but God has done the work through Jesus Christ to bring us back into right relationship. The very foundation of who we are and what we believe involves being reconciled to God, but it also involves being reconciled to one another. And in many times, in the New Testament especially, but even around the world, places throughout time and space where there have been churches, the church literally became family for the people who were its members. There was no other place to go to have not only your spiritual needs met, but also your physical and emotional needs. And if you didn't have the church, you had nothing. Nothing. We see this in the pages of the New Testament. The second conflict, the second internal conflict in the church is found in the pages of Acts chapter 6. There is a disagreement over how food is being distributed to widows. Some of the widows grew up and came to Christ there in Jerusalem. Others had moved in from out of town, but they both needed food, and some were getting enough in the regular food distribution, and others were not. It seems that the church spiritually had not yet overcome ethnic differences among their membership. And so what was the response of the church in that situation? They found the most spiritual among them and appointed them to be deacons to resolve the matter of the food distribution because people needed to eat. There was a second one, though, where differences among membership, the difference upon status within the church had created a problem. This is a couple pages later in the New Testament, in the letter of 1 Corinthians. Paul is writing to the church in Corinth because he's not happy with what he hears about their love feast. Now, it would seem that in the church in Corinth, people came to love feast because they really needed that meal as part of what they would eat. Now, when I was growing up, one of the things that I learned was that Love Feast wasn't really a meal. And the worst thing that I could do, if I really wanted to embarrass my mother, it would be to show up hungry to Love Feast. Now, I was a teenage boy. I think my junior year of high school, I weighed 120 pounds. And I probably could have eaten my weight in sop and chased it down with half a loaf of communion bread. But I learned that you don't go to Love Feast hungry. I will confess that I think that's a little bit strange, that maybe we're missing something there, but that's a conversation probably for another day. But at church, the church in Corinth, it would seem that their Love Feast meal was an actual meal where people came because they were poor, and eating at the church dinners was one place where they could get a good amount of food, a decent supper that day. But there were economic differences in the membership there. And it's probably not too far of a stretch of that text to say that the wealthier folks could get off work earlier, go on down to the Love Feast, start early, and eat all of the food before the poor folk got there, and there wasn't any left. Those are the ones that Paul says, you know, eat at home. You know, pay attention to one another. Because church mattered for those persons that much. It actually was family. It actually was where they got all of their needs met. This month's issue of Christianity Today has a really interesting article from a church, a particular congregation in Kenya, where a man came to Christ and was baptized, leaving behind his Muslim faith and family. And when he accepted Jesus, his family not only disowned him, kicking him out, they threatened to kill him. It happens a lot. And so this man literally has no place to go but the church. And the church responded. They gave him a bed in a part of the church building and said, "This will be your home." And he was grateful. But then later on, he shared with the authors of the story that one of the hardest parts of his week came every Sunday at the end of worship, where all of the church members went home for lunch with their families and left him there by himself. Now, for my own purposes, I'd love to know how the story ends. The authors don't finish the story other than leave us with that much. But it would seem that the church hadn't yet figured out that not only welcome him, this man, into their lives and into their church family, they also needed to welcome him into their biological families. That church matters at that level for a lot of people, both in the New Testament era and on up to this day, which means, in case we've forgotten through those three very long stories, how we handle conflicts matter, because sometimes people have no place else to go but right here within our congregations and in our church family. And so how do we handle these things? When we see that something is the matter, when we see that there is pain, we often say things like, what? It's not my place to judge. You ever heard that said? Yeah, we say it a lot. It's not my place to judge. We don't say that until we've seen something that we know isn't quite right. It's kind of an odd thing about us, isn't it? You know, we don't just go around randomly saying, you know, nobody ever says to me in the line after fellow church when you're shaking my hand on the way out, oh, by the way, Tim, it's not my place to judge. That never comes up in conversation until we see that there's a problem. And then we start to say it. Well, that's what I want us to look at this morning. The text is interesting, and there's three words in this text that are relevant. Ben, if you give me the next slide, and click it one more time. Judge. There's three words that I want us to look at in this passage and unpack their meaning to help us get at it. The word judge means exactly what we think it means. Looking at the Greek definition, it means to distinguish, to give preference, to speak or think ill of, or to decide. It is the New Testament word that the biblical writers use when they want to talk about things like Judgment Day and the way that God can, should God so choose, to evaluate our lives. And inasmuch as we say it's not my place to judge, we are somewhat correct in that statement, in that it is not our place to determine or to assign a value to the ultimate worth of someone's soul. We are not in any instance to look at another person and determine whether or not they ought to be cast out as useless or beyond redemption. That is, in fact, a job that belongs to God and to God alone. But that doesn't mean that we're not supposed to be helpful to one another in times of difficulty. And that, Ben, brings us to the next two words in the text, see and notice. How is it that you see the speck in your brother's or sister's eye? These are not the same words in the Greek. The verb to see means exactly what we think it means, to look upon a situation with our eyes and recognize something that is there. Like, you can see that I'm wearing a blue tie. Or I know a lot of you like my socks. If I pulled up my pants leg, you'd see that I'm wearing my socks with musical notes on them that Jane gave me. We can see things are a certain way. What we often fail to notice is what's going on in our own souls. The verb to notice is deeper. It involves not only our eyes, but our minds and our hearts as well. So when we see that someone has done something that is hurtful to another person, have we noticed what's going on in our own lives? Have we noticed the ways that we fall short in our own lives and dealt with that before we move to speak to another person's situation? See, the thing about specks in eyes is I've gotten a few of those along the way in my wood shop. Even with safety glasses, you still occasionally get something in your eye. And every now and then you get a really tough one that you just can't seem to do anything with on your own. And it sure is nice in those situations when you have somebody else who can come along and look at that, to see it, to literally see the speck in your eye and help you get it out. So my question for us this morning is this. When we see situations that have caused pain, what do we do with it? Do we sweep it under the rug? Well, that just leaves a pretty big bump in the rug. Do we hope that it goes away And we just let the person who is hurt carrying it around, hoping that we won't see it, and if we don't see it, that it doesn't exist? Are we really being nice if we're allowing people to remain hurt, allowing people to remain carrying their own pain? We're not to be hateful to one another, but we might, with the grace of God, be helpful to one another in these times of difficulty. Because when it comes down to it, all we have is our faith in Jesus Christ and one another. Where would we be without those two things? Amen.